the children are our future. Teach them well and let them lead the way. Show them all the beauty they possess inside. Give them a sense of pride to make it easier. Let the children's laughter remind us how we used to be. Everybody's searching for a hero. People need someone to look up to. I never found anyone who fulfilled my need. A lonely place. So I learned to depend on me. I decided long ago never to walk in anyone's shadow. If I fail, if I succeed, at least I'll live as I believe. No matter what they take from me, they can't take away my dignity.
Welcome to another edition of Progressive News Weekly. My name is Daryl Clark, and you are at the right place at the right time. And as our bumper tune stated, yes, I believe children are our future. Truly, our future. Teach them well, and let them lead the way. Show them all the beauty they possess inside. Give them a sense of pride to make it easier. Let the children's laughter remind us of how it used to be. For those of you who are over the age of 30, that resonates with you, I'm more than sure. And so, as I said, welcome to another edition of Progressive News Weekly, here where week in and week out, we bring you news and information that is brought to you or called from around the world. It's news that, news that you can use. It's news for you, by you, and of you. It's news that's unadulterated. It's not influenced by business or commercial interest. And so with that, we encourage all of our listeners and our guests to speak profoundly, to speak with the freedom that we here in this country have a right to speak with. And so I encourage you to speak truth to power, as we will always promise you we will do. With that said, this is an exciting program today, one that is intended and I believe will encourage you and inspire you, certainly enlighten you and empower you. And at least it's my goal and hope and belief that it will instill you to get involved and make a difference. Every major change in this country was either initiated or at least heavily influenced by grassroots action. And that means you and I. And so that's very appropriate for our program today. And for those of you who are on the mail list, you know we are in the midst of our Black History programming. Of course, here on Progressive News Weekly, any given week will be Black History programming. But we will, of course, celebrate Black History Month and therefore make sure that we participate in the heritage and the legacy, because it is so very important that we recognize that which we've struggled and worked hard for. And one of those things is Black History Month. This week, we have a very special guest. And he comes to you with a wealth of knowledge. He is one who walks the talk. He speaks truth to knowledge. Truth to power, broad breadth of knowledge. And so, as I like to say, hold on to your seat, because we're getting ready to get started with that in a moment. Before that, though, I'd like to talk just a little bit about last week's program. For those of you who missed it, we had Dr. Jawanza Kanjufu. And if you don't know who Dr. Jawanza Kanjufu is, I highly, highly, highly encourage you. Google Dr. Kanjufu. Just as the word sounds, Jawanza, J-A-W-A-N-Z-A, Kanjufu, K-U-N-J-U-F-U. And it'll speak for itself. He's an author, world-renowned educator, humanitarian, consultant. He's written over 30 books. As a humanitarian, although he truly cares about all of humanity, his focus is primarily on the African-American community, which we've said numerous times, countless times, been disenfranchised in this country and by some standards around the world. So if you missed that interview, I highly, highly, highly suggest that you go to the archives at blogtalkradio.com/Renford, and that will bring you into the RBR network, of which my program is one of many, and you'll scroll down until you find Daryl Clark's Progressive News Weekly, and then you'll click on that program, which would have been the 5th of February, 2015, and just begin the enlightenment process. Now, as much as Dr. Dwanza Kanjufu had to say about our present situation, and when I say our, I'm speaking of the African-American community specifically in America, with a backdrop of our history, he had many, many things to say, much of which was centered around the importance of education and the lack thereof that African-Americans, relative to other races and cultures, have. And he suggested that that was one of the main things that we have to do to begin to rectify our dire situation. And I concur with him. Now, there were some things that Dr. Dwanza Kanjufu said that maybe you or some of our listeners would not necessarily agree with wholeheartedly. Ask Mr. Ron Crenshaw, who is a frequent guest. I'm going to ask if he would be willing to give us his synopsis of Dr. Dwanza Kanjufu's perspective on what is going on in the African-American community. He spoke of statistics, 80% of black males being illiterate, percent don't graduate, 60% out of work, and stating that most of these things tie back to lack of education, which leads to crime, which leads to prison, and the cycle goes on. So with that said, I'm going to just take a moment to ask Mr. Ron Crenshaw if he would just give us his perspective briefly, because right after we have Ron speak, and Ron is a regular listener. He is what I like to say, a historian, truly a political activist, speaking truth to power, has been our guest many times. And so as a little treat for our listeners, and we do this from time to time, that's why you need to come on the program early, I'm going to ask Mr. Ron Crenshaw if he could give us a 5-minute summation of his perspective of Dr. Dwanza Kanjufu's interview last week. Now, if you'd like to comment as a listener, you can call 347-838-9142 and join in this dialogue. And right after we get a little synopsis from Ron, and Ron will be joining us in the weeks ahead, so regardless of where we end with that, we'll be continuing that dialogue. But right after that, we're going to go into an interview with a critical thinker, a true humanitarian, and someone that information that you'll want to be aware of. And that would be Mr. Kevin Porter. More on that in a moment. But first, welcome to Progressive News Weekly, Mr. Ron Crenshaw.
Thank you. Thank you, Darryl. I appreciate you having me on. I want to say that first and foremost. Yes, I felt that Dr. Kanjufu was very good. I mean, he stressed the important things that the black youth needs to have. You know, the skills, develop those skills. I mean, there's no limit to how far we need to go with developing our skills. That's ultimately, you know, the ultimate importance. And that I agree with him totally. It's just that he's an educator, and of course he focuses on that area, and he's very good at that area. I wouldn't try to challenge him in that area at all. I just wanted to add some of the other stuff that by not being into, you know, politics and political science, that there's some things that hold blacks back, and that's the system we live in called capitalism. So, I mean, like, it's not a matter that we can't learn. It's a matter that a lot of doors are shut. And we can't get through them, you see. So, I mean, we all know that we still live in a segregated society. I mean, so also the avenues of going up the ladder also are small. So it's a matter that we have to also understand what the blocks are that are against us, what blocks us. But that shouldn't stop us from trying to educate ourselves and go forward by all means. So I didn't want to, you know, say that he was wrong in what he was saying. He was right in education. But let me get to the point that I wanted to really say was about, for one, employment. Employment is something that is very ticklish and sensitive in the society, because there always has to be an army of unemployed labor. And that's important for the system and the profit system, I should be specific about. It's important for the profit system to be maintained. It's to have more people looking for work than work exists. That keeps wages down. So therefore, that's why that's important to the system to maintain itself. And the idea that we have segregation in the society is important because one of the most important aspect is that working class people have to be divided so that they don't come together and understand who is really taking advantage of them. That's why we live in a caste system of whites and non-whites. And, of course, since whites are the majority, it's easy to maintain this segmentation, you see, and you give one group better opportunities than you give the other. That's very important, and that's how capitalism in the United States got on its feet, because as Africans first came here, they were indentured servants just like whites. But since they band together with working class whites and rebel several times, I mean, many times rebel, they came up with the idea that they had to segment them. And so therefore, that's why they put blacks into chattel slavery and had whites to be their policemen. So that's how all of the, rationalization of inferiority developed and now is, you know, just all pervasive. So that's a segment. The other segment was about black-on-black crime. Well, black-on-black crime is high, and I do agree, but, you know, there's white-on-white crime also, and we get very little notice of that in the news media, you see. So it's on both sides. And when people are oppressed and oppressed severely, there is a tendency for them to have more crime in their neighborhood because the oppression that they're receiving, they need an outlet. And this sometimes comes out with people that are closest to you rather than the people who are doing the oppressing, because usually you can't get to the people who are really doing the oppression. So that's the point I wanted to stress there. And, you know, so I thought that was very important. And we see how the Criminal Justice Society is very racist, you see, because they have we have a high count of blacks in jail in proportion to whites. So, I mean, you have a criminal justice system that is extremely biased against us. We get hit with larger sentences, I should say longer sentences, than whites do for the same type of crime. That's a known fact. I mean, that's a fact there. So, you know, there's things that we have to understand are there, and we have to understand why they're there. And the point is that profit is almighty, you see. So that's why we need to understand that there's a limitation to capitalism, and capitalism doesn't work for working people. We need a socialist system that would be more egalitarian than this, because America really not is egalitarian at all. But, I mean, people saw that we had a black president. We thought that things would change because of that. But, no, they haven't, and they can't. And this was a token thing given for a particular time in an international situation. Has a lot to do with Obama being a black president, you see. So, I mean, these things are there, and they're well thought out. They're there for a purpose, and the purpose is never to unify the working class in this country. It must be kept divided, and, you know, the cop brutality, police brutality, and all of that is very important also to be maintained.
Okay, well, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Because I definitely want to get to our guest speaker for today.
Sure.
In summary, and Ron, let's continue this dialogue. This is good. In summary, you don't disagree with Dr. Jawanza Kanjufu in terms of education being important. However, you would underscore, in addition to that, some other things that severely are impacting the dire situation that African Americans are in. And those things would be unemployment, segregation,
right,
and the oppression of the and discriminatory practices, bias practices of our criminal justice system. Is that a sort of a summation?
That's a summation. That's a good summation. Sure.
That's
because we are in a very oppressive society. See, and I could go further, but we don't have time right now. Go further to show that we don't live in a democratic society at all. But that'll take up later, you know, because that needs a lot of detail, and I'd like to present that at some future date. Okay.
And you know we will.
Okay.
So with
that,
hope you'll stay on board for our next guest, and maybe have some comments or questions or insight that you can lend to that. And so
okay.
I thank you, Ron, for joining us once again. Mr. Ron Crenshaw, political activist, true humanitarian, whether he wants to admit it or not, I consider him an authority in terms of history of America, and especially African Americans. So with that said, our special guest today, I'm so pleased that we were able to get him a book for tonight, because he was so willing to intervene with his schedule to join us, is Mr. Kevin Porter. Now, just to give you a little bit of background about Kevin Porter, this is his first guest appearance on Progressive News Weekly. So my regular listeners know that we don't bring folks on who haven't been vetted and who don't have anything to say. And it goes without saying, he will be back, because we have a half an hour left, and what he has to share with us goes well beyond that. So we look forward to a new friend of Progressive News Weekly and Mr. Kevin Porter. But before I bring him on, let me just say a little bit about Mr. Kevin Porter. This is truly a person who walks the talk, an author, engineer, educator. Mr. Porter is a long-standing child advocate, over 20-plus years, primarily serving the at-risk African-American male community. He has served as an educator. He's taught math and science. He has been and still is, and you'll let him tell it, will always be a role model, unlike Charles Barkley, who claims he's not afraid of his responsibility. He has served as the executive director of Man-Made Mentoring, a black male mentoring group, and Lord knows we could use as many of those as we can get. He's participated in numerous mentoring programs. He utilizes his relationship and memberships and affiliations with many adult, civic, and community organizations to move forward the progress of our youth. To help switch the mindset of our black youth, especially from street gang mentality or just street mentality, to embracing intellect through classroom learning and setting worthy goals. We're going to talk a little bit about his recent book, Angry Little Men, Hypermasculinity, Academic Disconnect, and Mentoring African American Males. I'd like to welcome to Progressive News Weekly, Mr. Kevin Porter. Welcome, Mr. Porter.
Thank you, Daryl. And I want to thank your listeners and thank you for having me on. I'm looking forward to a progressive conversation about our African-American boys out there.
Yeah, this is so good. You know, we opened up with one of my favorite bumper tunes, and we always do, and sometimes we'll do some tunes in between guests. But today, I don't know if you were in the studio at the time, we opened up with one of my favorites. It was George Benson's version. Of course, there are many versions, including Whitney Houston, and we can go on, of Greatest Love of All. And I know from talking with you, reading about you through your book, and your bios, it resonates with you as well, that you too believe that children are our future. Teach them well and let them lead the way. One of my favorite lyrics. Yes, so show them all the beauty they possess inside. Teach them a sense of pride to make it easier. Let the children's laughter remind us of how we used to be. And I think we not only should be doing that, but we have a responsibility to do that. And I take my hat off to you for the work that you have done in that area. And so with that, I'm going to take a minute to just let our listeners get to know a little bit more about Mr. Kevin Todd Porter. Have you always been one to be involved, be a community advocate, or is this something that struck you because of a salient event in your, you know, young adult life or older adult life? How did you come to be who you are?
All right. Well, I guess the best phrase I can use is I've always felt like I've been a servant, but my ability to serve has progressed over the years. You know, when you're young, you tend to be self-serving and you just serve yourself. And as you go into high school, you realize that you may be a little smart. You can go off to college. The community I grew up in was Kansas City, Missouri. Pretty rough neighborhood where we grew up. And you found yourself in some difficult situations. You found yourself surrounded by drugs, crime, and you adapt to your environment. And I had a street mentality on the street, and I had a classroom mentality in the classroom. I was an excellent student. graduated number two in my high school class. I was captain of the football team, captain of the baseball team. But I also knew how to handle myself in the streets, and you have to. And as an African-American male, we all find ourselves in situations where we have to protect ourselves as we walk the streets. And I realized that that was important for me. It gave me not a name, but it was a protective mechanism. And you find young men who have to carry that protective mechanism. And as I went off to college, I realized that the world didn't exist like that. The world in a college campus, you find yourself engaged with learning and other people who want to learn, and you don't have to battle the streets or what have you. And my friends who stayed behind, one of my best friends was murdered as a result of, you know, adapting to the street mentality and not transforming over to what I call the mainstream. So as I got older, I realized that there was something that was missed in our community. Our parents wanted the best things for us, every one of our parents. I looked at my best friend. His mom told him exactly what my mom told me. You can be anything you want to be. But we lack the example sometimes. Sometimes you can tell a student you can do this math problem, but if you can't teach them how to do it, they can't comprehend it. So when I went off to college, I found myself in an organization, a fraternity, and one of the first things we did was community service. And I realized at that point in time, the light went off, that there were people who depended on me that were smaller than me, who tried to model themselves after me as you go back into the community. So I felt the need to give back to my community. And as I got older and started working, I started giving back, going to the schools, and I thought that just telling the student that you need to be on the right track, that they would get it. And lots of times when they're in a classroom with you, you got a classroom of 15 to 20 young men, they are attentive. But one day, I saw those kids, mannerable in classroom with me, walk out, and they code switched on me. They did what I used to do. You act a certain way in the classroom, and you act a different way in the hallways. And what they typically did in the classroom was brought in their street mentality that is not conducive for adapting to the education responsibility that we have. And most of our young men, because of the environment, what I classify as hyper-masculine, they have to be a little bit more manly, or they have to be tough. They have to sometimes go against the grain. And sometimes that does not adapt to being successful in school. And the mindset says that they will catch up, but most of the time they continue to fall behind. So I made it my mission to try to do the most I can in helping these young men grow. Whatever community I went to, whatever organization that said they had a mentoring program, I wanted to be in the front working with them. And as I did that, the question became, well, why is it that they're not doing so well academically? Because that is one of the keys to success, academics. You can take a path on athletics. That has led a few people to success. But academics tends to lead more people to success. Why aren't our young boys doing well academically? I went off to college to study. I had a master's. By that time, I had already obtained a master's in electrical engineering from Georgia Tech. But I wanted to study something about at-risk young men. So I went and got a master's degree in psychological science. I wanted to understand the developmental psychology of at-risk kids. I did research. I did surveys. I did questionnaires. I did a thesis on hypermasculinity and disengagement, academic disengagement. What I found is our kids do not lack any self-confidence. They have plenty of self-confidence. What we often find is that the environment continues to model something for our kid that is negative. What we also found is that most teachers are predominantly white in our African-American community and throughout, because white teachers outnumber African-American teachers. It's hard for a middle-class white person to be able to relate to an African-American male or African-American community. There's things that are done, playing a dozen, way we act, way we walk, that sometimes gets us in trouble. And it prevents our kids from connecting to the academic process that helps us grow and mature and to be successful. I think my book clearly shows what other books haven't shown. Most books look at the crime rate. Most books look at poverty. Most books just count us out because of our African-American color. What I'm saying is that hypermasculinity that we find in boys, this is a developmental process because of the environment, because of the negative things that approach us, that we approach life a little bit differently. And if you cannot relate to that, then you will not be able to help this young man develop and move into a code-switching capability where he is academically raising up his standards. So I try to talk to young men, show them by example, give them the confidence to be able to become disciplined and focused so that they may do well in their academic profession.
Well, I heard you use that word code, and I noticed in your book that you actually have a model, and that word code, I suspect when you even used it just now, had a double connotation. One, a code, as the word implies, that being a translation from one thing to another, but then also it serves as an abbreviation,
right,
for model that you have created. And I think you also used it in that context at the same time. Am I correct?
That's correct. What I call code.
A couple things. One, before you go into code, because you know that's going to be my next question, Kevin.
Right.
Before you go into that CODE and what it stands for and how it's pertinent to your view of how our black males may reverse this degrading and destructive behavior, give us a little foundation on hypermasculinity, because that term, I believe, from what I have read, speaks volumes about your whole premise.
Right.
So give us a little backdrop on this hypermasculinity. What is hypermasculinity? I mean, we can think about the term, you know, literally in terms of what we would think it would mean, but what does it mean to Kevin Porter?
All right. Well, hypermasculinity, let's think of it this way. You have a young boy in elementary school, and he seems to be modeling a male who is tough, a male who is independent, a male who avoids authority, a male who thinks that danger is exciting, one that thinks that violence is manly, one who becomes aggressive. And the reason why it's termed hypermasculinity, because we young boys will develop their masculinity. But what happens is in some communities, especially African-American community, it becomes a hypermasculinity because the young elementary age boys, kindergarten, first and second grade, start off with this aggression at such an early stage that by the time they reach middle school, they have in their mind become one who thinks he is already matured to be a man, to defend himself, to be aggressive, to be anti-authority. When someone tells him you need to sit down, he feels that in the middle school or elementary, he can tell you no, because he thinks that he is on the same level as an adult. When I taught school, taught elementary school, and one of the things that disturbed me is when I saw a kindergartner beat up another kindergartner, and he beat him up as if he has seen this act several times. I'm not talking about somebody pushing down. I'm not talking about somebody just punching. I'm talking about trying to do physical harm. It would have been an assault if he was an adult. This hypermasculinity is not necessarily an act of violence, but is an act against authority. It is an appreciation for being aggressive. You see young boys playing these video games that are using violence to make a point. You see young boys who want to join gangs at an early age because they think that is cool. You see young boys who are in the streets selling drugs because they feel like they are a man and they can do things. Part of the problem, one, is the community we grew up in has poverty, but the other problem is that most of the time our young boys are being raised by single moms, and it's nothing against single moms. My mom and dad got a divorce when I was 14, so she really carried the torch. But the thing is, it's difficult to challenge a young boy if he thinks that he is your equal and he is a man, because he's seen it modeled. He's seen men stand up to other men. He's seen violence, and he's seen men degrade women. Hypermasculinity is that essence that prevents our young men from engaging in the classroom. If I think that I am above you as a teacher, I don't have to answer your questions. I don't have to be engaged. I don't have to do the things that the girls are doing, answering questions or doing work. I'll just do enough to get by. I know I have to go to school, but you are not in control of me. I've seen it with my eyes, and we know it in our community.
Wow. You know what? You've said a lot, and everything is relevant. You've mentioned the hyper-masculinity, in a sense, is an act against authority. It's a boy wanting to naturally be tough, independent, violent, aggressive, disrespecting authority. Those are traits of masculinity. I mean, let's face it. I mean, going back 100 years, 1,000 years, those are traits. But I think what I'm hearing now in the explanation is that HYPER, which I could capitalize, put in bold, underline, and italics, and if I had color ink, put it in red. It's that hyper, I think, is what you're saying is the issue, because all those things are starting at an age that didn't always start 50, 100, 1,000 years ago, at 5, 4, 6. And a lot of the why behind that are because these children are having an exposure to things that they didn't have before, in combination with nothing to counterbalance it, such as a male in the home. And so it's running rampant like a train without any air brakes down the track.
Yeah.
Beginning from the time that it leaves the station, as opposed to just building up momentum, coming down to the next stop, slowing down. It's just blowing through every stop.
Yes.
And that's what I think I'm sensing that you're saying. Now, well, with that said, when I hear videos, gangs, drugs, some of those things were around before. Gangs have been around, again, 100 years, 1,000 years, probably stimulants as well. If it's not drugs, it's alcohol. But I think there's a hyper piece to the drugs with some of the, you know, custom drugs that they have now, ecstasy, and there's several new ones way beyond ecstasy. If there were youth on the phone now, they might even laugh at me by saying it because that is three generations old. Then you've got the gangs now that are more prevalent than ever at a very young age, which tie back to the single motherhood. So it's not just straight and simple. It's a matrix of influences that have caused this hyperactivity. The videos, the technology, the access, not just to videos, which are violent, but to what is known as an internet, which is giving our children access to things that you and I, at least me, you know, in my 50s, used to get together with my friends. Because, as I said, masculinity is going to be masculinity. I mean,
right.
You know, in fact, you know, there's some men, most men, I'm going to be frank, most men, you know, they don't want their child to be some punk, you know, who's going to be, you know, not necessarily masculine. Nothing against those who, this isn't homophobic, who have taken a different lease on what their sexual preferences are. Let's just stay mainstream here, because that is not mainstream yet.
Right, right.
It, as much as you see it more than ever before, it's not mainstream. You know, 80% of the statistics bear it out are still not gay. Even though you see it in sports, the people are coming out. Let's just stay mainstream right now. So most men, I believe, would want to see their male offspring to be tough, but they certainly don't want them to be gang-banging, drug-dealing, sexually perverted, mentally skewed, deranged, to the point where they're unable to learn, gain
right.
access to power, real power,
right. yep.
not drug street power. So what I'm hearing, therefore, is this hyper aspect is part of the problem. I'm going to turn it to you in a moment to solutions. But I'm hearing that the excess and depth now of the drugs, the gangs being more prevalent than ever at even younger ages because of the male being missing in the household. And Dr. Juanza Kanjufu made a very, very pertinent point of that last week when he said just not even 50 years ago, we were talking 80% of black male households had two parents.
Yeah.
50 years ago, was that a generation? Maybe two.
Two.
And now we're down to almost 25%. I mean,
yeah.
that's a huge swing in a short time.
Yes.
I don't know who could – that. You're talking about decompression. You know, take me back and bring me up slowly. That's too much, too fast. Any society – to be able to comprehend, not to mention be able to handle. So when you take that into consideration, there goes your hyper. And then you add in the perversion. Right now, as I was about to say, and I'm going to hand it to you after this, we would have to go behind the garage. Yeah, you know, hey, my homeboys out there from Ohio, y'all remember, we get behind the garage and steal some of the girly magazines. But now, well, I put it in reverse order. We steal the girly magazines, then go behind the garage and you know, ooh, look at, you know, and all of
yeah.
that, right? Steal the
yeah.
cigarettes and all that stuff. But now it's wide open. You got a 14-year-old with a, you know, a 40-ounce.
yeah.
I'm glad it's, you know, I'm telling the truth.
Right.
And I can take that down to an 8-year-old. I've seen it. I've taught in the high school myself on special education projects dealing with at-risk males. specifically.
Mm-hmm.
And so I understand exactly where you're coming from. Let me hand it back to you for the remainder of this interview to tell us the premise of your book. As I said, with the internet now, the sky's the limit in terms of where this thing can take our children. I mean, you can go online now and see any kind of skizzy, perversion, porno, anything that you ever want to horrifically imagine. And this is what our children have access to do. So without any kind of guidance, as I said, to balance that. And there are some out there, and you have single parents. I don't use that as an excuse, just like yourself.
Right.
That are doing that thing. But the odds is what we're talking about. The odds are against our children. So how does your book address some of these things, and where does CODE fit in? You've got the mic.
All right, Daryl. Again, hypermasculinity, not the fact that we don't want our kids, our young boys, to be masculine, but we want our young boys to develop at a rate where they're obedient, where they're respectful, where they are not doing any risky things at an early age, that they mature, that they are engaged in school, that they participate and their behavior is evident of a mature learning child. And we all, like you said, develop masculinity, and it's not really about a young boy being tough. It's about a young boy being so engaged with his trying to attempt to be a man that becomes hyper. He thinks he is it. How do we reach these young boys? And what I found is that, like a teen, let's give it, for example, the New England Patriots. I know a lot of folks don't like them, but they have a team concept. There's an owner. There's a general manager. There's a coach. There's players. A team. What our community has, when we have the young boys, they need owners, parents to be engaged. They need coaches, which are teachers, to be engaged with them. They need a trust factor. So code switching and the code, the C, what I said, stands for connect. Help our young boys connect with their teacher, with their coach. You got to be able to connect, provide a vision with these young men. Some of these young men just, they are standoffish because they don't trust you. They can read through a teacher and see if the teacher cares. Sometimes you have to connect with that student. It's not all students that have behavior problems, but there are some students that need you to not only tell that young boy that he's got to get out of the class, but sit down with him and say, I'm going to help you with this math problem. I'm on your side, and you cannot give up. Teaching is a gift, and if you are a teacher, your desire should not be to get a paycheck. It is to connect with those children and make sure that nobody falls in the gap. So connect is the C. The next one is observation. Kids learn through observation. If a child does something wrong, do you just penalize him, punish him? No, you want him to be able to observe what that behavior was. You have to explain it to him. You have to let him see what he did wrong. Kids are teachable. Some kids just don't know that that is a wrong behavior. Throwing a pencil, throwing a book in the classroom, getting up, speaking out loud, not doing your homework. Help them observe the behavior that gets them in trouble. Help them understand how they can be a more positive aspect of their community. I tell my young boys, I'm mentoring 18 boys now. We went to an academic bowl, and one team made it to the semifinals. And one thing that I tell them about being a leader, if you can't lead yourself in the classroom, Nobody else is going to follow you anywhere else, not for something good. So your first opportunity to lead is in the classroom. So as a teacher, as a mentor, as a parent, help that student become a leader for himself. Help him observe where he is going wrong. Discipline, the D in code. Our kids, our African-American males, lack the discipline. We live in a microwave society. We live in a, we want to get the big paycheck first. We want to get out of high school and go to the NFL. Get out of high school, go to the NBA. We think that's it. That doesn't take discipline. Sometimes it means you have to get off that PlayStation to do some homework. Kids are so in a hurry to grow up fast that they forget that it requires discipline to be successful. We have to teach our kids to be disciplined. One thing as a mentor I do is I tutor my kids. A lot of people think that a mentor is providing somebody with some advice, talking to them every once in a while. I'm a servant. That means that I know you're deficient in math. I'm going to sit down with you and help you learn this math. I'm going to tell you requires discipline. Not only are you going to work when I'm with you, you need to work 30 minutes at your house. You need to read. Discipline. Teach our kids discipline. Finally, the example. Who serves as the example? Who are the kids looking at? Who are they modeling? They're modeling the people who come into contact with them so often. They're modeling us. We have to be that positive example for them. We have to teach them that as a man, I don't have to scream to get noticed. As a man, I don't have to dunk a basketball for somebody to stand up to cheer me on. As a man, I don't have to smell like alcohol to get respect. As a man, I need to set the example that men are positive, men are caring, men love to learn, men want to be successful. It's ingrained in us to be successful. Despite, we know we live in a racist society. We know we live in a capitalistic society. We know that there's odds against us in making it. I shouldn't be where I am right now. My two best friends, we took a picture in the eighth grade, and they called us the Three Musketeers. Both of them are dead. I shouldn't be here. I went off to school, University of Missouri, Rolla. The black enrollment was 0.5% African-American. Not 5%, 0.5%. They said, look at the person next to you on the right and left. One of y'all won't be there. When I went to college, after the first 6 weeks, I used up 12 years of my education. I never took calculus until I got to college. I'm an electrical engineer. You need four years of calculus. You need four semesters of physics. I had to really, really be disciplined. I had to really do some things that I didn't think I could do. I shouldn't be here, but I am. And because I'm here, I want to share that with these young men. So I try to tell them it's okay to be able to protect yourself. It's okay to, you know, not look as if you're soft. But you have to code switch in a classroom. You have to connect with your teacher, have a vision. Your vision has to be positive. You have to be observant. You got to observe your behavior. Your behavior gets you in trouble. Discipline is going to carry us because discipline requires you to really focus and to really learn and master. I try to teach mastery. I don't teach just go through the motion to learn this. You have to master it. You have to master it. We have a high unemployment rate, and one of the reasons is because math and science. How many young men, like African-American men, like math and science? They shy away from it because it requires discipline. It requires you to sit down and to learn it and to master it and be the example. We're looking for role models. Not only are we looking for role models, we're looking for people who are willing to serve our young people because this generation, it could be lost. But whose fault is it? It's our fault. It's my fault. So I can't save the world, but anytime I go into a school and I see that there's African-American boys, first thing I want to know is how many made the honor roll, how many made the National Honor Society. The school where my daughter goes to, I have three children of my own, 16-year-old boy, 14-year-old daughter, and a 10-year-old daughter. Where I do my mentoring is at my 14-year-old daughter's middle school. Last year, their school enrollment for 6th, 7th, and 8th grade was 675 students. They had a National Junior Honor Society induction. Only one African-American male was inducted into the National Junior Honor Society at that school. The population at that school for African-American is about 14-15%, but only one made it to the National Junior Honor Society. That tells me something. That tells me something, that we have some work to do. He was a young man that I mentored, but he was already on that path. I cannot take credit for that. He happened to be on that path. I worked so I can tell these kids to be champions, to be classroom champions. We cheer for those teams that show championships. We cheer for the Tom Brady's. We cheer for the Marshawn Lynch's. Let's cheer for these kids to be classroom champions. Let's give them the code to switch from the behaviors in the streets and maintain some good behavior in the classroom, academic success in the classroom. I wish you get my book. It's been researched. I did a lot of research. Angry Little Men, Hypermasculinity, Academic Disconnect, and Mentoring African-American Males. It can be purchased. Call 708-672-4909, extension 731. The publisher is African-American Images. And go to www.AfricanAmericanImages.com, Angry Little Men. Angry? Yeah. We hold a facade. We have something that we don't, not sure about, so our presence looks angry. But we need to help. This research has really helped some of the young men that I'm dealing with. And I hope and I know it can help some of the young men in your community as well.
You know what? I thank you for taking the time. After the program, I'd like to reach out to you as we close out today. I'd like to continue this dialogue, if that's okay for you. It doesn't take a lot necessarily. It just takes some consistency, I believe.
Yes.
So we're just going to continue giving a little love where we can, a lot of love where we can, a little love where we can, and a lot of love where we can.
That's
and,
right.
And it does come down to taking care of our own, and then also taking care of others, because whether you have a biological child or not, these are all our children. And as I said, I believe children are our future. Teach them well and let them lead the way. So, Kevin Porter, I appreciate it. Author, educator, engineer, master mentor. I'm going to throw that one at you.
All right, I like that.
Yeah, that's what we're going to do, because, you know, there's a lot of organizations that are mentoring. I'm involved with several myself, and I think that your book is one that could serve as a guide, and not necessarily the only guide, I'll keep it real
right
here, definitely as a guide to help with the efforts that are being done around this country to help reverse what's going on. These conversations are happening across the country. My brother, Kansas City, I love Kansas City, one of my favorite Midwestern towns. You know, I'm a Clevelander myself.
All right.
I live in Jersey now. Our engineer, Memphis, my buddy Ron is out of New York City. We're all out here in the fight, and I believe we need to come together. So I'm going to ask you to come back, continue the dialogue, and let's try to just make this thing happen here.
Yes, we will. And I appreciate you for having me on. I appreciate your listeners. All I do is serve with love. It's not about me. It's about the kids. It's about the children. It's about leaving a legacy and allowing them to grow and prosper and be able to fulfill their dreams. I appreciate you, Daryl.
Appreciate you too, Mr. Porter. And we're going to have you back real soon. That's another...
the archives at run down to Daryl's Weekly. And some of the other programs on the... Back History Program.